MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey, listen.
Hey.
Hey, listen.
Hey there.
Hey, wake up. I can't believe Hyrule's fate is in the hands of such a lazy boy, which if you'll recall, I believe is the opening line of Ocarina of Time, which we're not talking about at all, but we are talking
what
about
a, tease.
A different time that that character Link woke up, because that's the Link. That's the connection, I mean. That's the Zelda. That's the conjunction. Welcome to One Upsmanship. I'm Michael Swaim.
And I'm Adam Ganser.
To reveal.
Adam Ganser. Who's just really not in sync yet with you. I think it was just the Navi thing just like really threw me off. The irritation came back straight from 1998. Just, ugh.
Well, it so stood out in a game where everyone else is talking, if I remember, is like Pikmin style, where it's like, bah, 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 and then the text would just come up, and you're like, why does this fucking fairy get to say the word hey at me all the time? Like the English word hey.
Yeah, does Zelda actually get to talk? I don't remember if she actually talks in that game.
I could be wrong, but my memory is telling me that she goes like, ah. And the text comes up, you know?
Yeah, the way that all
Muppet
Nintendo
style.
Games do. Yeah.
Well, even up to Breath of the Wild. At this point, it's not a bandwidth or like, can we fit it on the chip thing? It's an artistic choice that I think they look at it as like a Pixar maneuver. It makes it universally, you know, it can ship globally.
Yes, I think that's
true. You don't
true.
Have to record a second track.
Except that Breath of the Wild chose to do both things. Because they have cutscenes where they can talk, and then but most of the time it's the Muppet thing, like you were saying. So that's a strange choice.
It is interesting.
Yeah,
I was just playing Yakuza 0 for the first time, and I thought it froze when the first cutscene happened, and it turned out they just do the cutscenes in an animatic style. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen, dude. Hmm. It'll like cut to a close up of someone still,
but
then because they experience an emotion, like. Their frown will deepen and their brow will furrow, but they stay perfectly still otherwise. It's like slightly animated animatics. It's bizarre.
So they go to like a less complicated version of media to tell the most cinematic part. Interesting.
Which, at the risk of overgeneralizing, that is a theme in a lot of mainstream Japanese art. Simplification being less is more as a guiding factor.
Hmm.
So I think that could be a part of the design philosophy. Obviously not of everyone in Japan. That would be foolish to assert. But I think it's a trend.
Okay.
Just like glorifying gun violence is a very clear trend in American culture.
Hard to argue with it at this point. Pretty tough.
It's weird as an American to take it for granted and then actually realize that like if you grew up in Europe and watched American films... it would be glaring how many guns there are.
It's like,
weird.
We get it, like, America. Yeah.
We get it, America. You love guns. Jeez. Yeah, yeah. other countries don't really have like 95% of movies have to be gun related. And indeed, this game we're going to cover is not gun related, is it? No, bow and arrow.
I don't believe so. I don't think there's a gun in it. Yeah.
There's no gun in it, but there's a Ganon in it. Not
brief.
This one, though.
No. He does.
Oh,
he
does
shows
he?
Up
does
very
he?
Briefly.
Okay, good.
Yes. He shows up very briefly.
But yeah, we're talking L.A., Louisiana, Los Angeles, no Link's Awakening. So let's pass that first checkpoint, which in this case would be, I think, just every time you pass through a threshold. Is that right?
I think that's correct, although there are warp points that you have to uncover. There's like six of them.
Let's feed some shells into the thing and see if the water level rises enough. Because if it does, it means it's time for the first thing, which is speed run.
Speed
we
run.
Don't have a guest this time, and I can't remember who did it last time we didn't have a guest. Do you feel like doing the speed run or not?
I will give it a shot.
All right.
I will give that a shot.
Adam Ganser bringing you your Link's Awakening speed run. Start the clock.
Now, The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening was originally a Game Boy game released in 1993. It is the fourth installment, I want to say, in the Legend of Zelda series overall, which means there were the first three of them, the first two being on the NES, the next one being on Super Nintendo, and then this was released on the Game Boy. The game was lovingly remastered with a sort of animated toy-like texture for the Nintendo Switch and released in 2019. It was probably one of the biggest hits this year on Nintendo's on the Switch, I would argue. And it is basically the same exact size and scale that the game was in Game Boy, other than just a kind of a facelift, if you will.
To the pixel, almost.
Yes, I'm told it's like a very faithful remake, including the story.
The world map, but even to the point, sorry, I won't interrupt again after this, but just because it bears on your point, and I just learned this today from a friend, the clumps of grass are in the exact same orientation. It's that level of slavish remake. It's like the Psycho remake.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense to me. That's Nintendo. They love their things that much. If you're unfamiliar with a Legend of Zelda game, I cannot believe that you stumbled onto this podcast. But if you are not familiar, it's the whimsical fairy tale story of a heroic boy who is forced to save either a land or an island, in this case, by journeying from dungeon to dungeon, acquiring proper items that unlocks the next path to the next dungeon until finally you face some final boss and there is some story to it. This is one of the better ones historically, and I enjoyed this quite a bit. And that's my speedrun.
All right. Good job, buddy.
Thank you. I felt good about it. Thank you.
That brings us to the rants. Player one ranting on.
Yeah.
This I never played the original, so that if you're going into the episode, rants are usually where we give more personal context. So the main context for me is that I didn't play the Game Boy version, so you should know that and filter all of your opinions of what I say through that lens. This was a huge year for remakes between this and the Resident Evil 2 remake, which also it was a game I barely played the original. Always knew I should play because it's the equivalent of a classic film that you're supposed to have seen. And when I finally played the remake, was like, fuck yeah, yes, good. It's like when I finally watched Die Hard, which I watched very late in life, and was like, yeah, did you guys know Die Hard's really good? And everyone's like, yeah, we
know. Yeah, bro. yeah, we get it. Yeah.
And I was like, but there's a lot of movies we say that about, and I see it and go, ah, it was good. And they're like, no. But everyone knows when they say it about Die Hard. No, it's really good. It's like really good. And that's essentially how I feel about Resident Evil 2 and how I feel about Link's Awakening remake. Assuming that the graphical facelift as well as the addition of a dungeon builder. And there was one other change. What else did they add? There's an ad.
They made a dungeon that is a color-based dungeon, which I'm imagining
was not in
probably
the first one.
Wasn't in the first iteration of it
because the Game Boy was black and white. But
right.
Given that, I would have to imagine the experience is very similar, especially because the graphics are, if you follow me, like these graphics are cute and very polished, but not stellar. In the same way that I think if I played it on Game Boy when it came out, I would say the graphics are competent but not mind-blowing. So I feel like I had a fairly equivalent experience to playing it, like to playing the original, as equivalent as I could simulate, given the fact that I didn't play it and so much time has passed and it's too late and we can't go back. Oh, God, my life. I fucking loved it. What a tight, sweet little... This is starting to sound filthy, but what a tight, sweet little boy that
Link
is.
Sweet little game, yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoyed plumbing the depths of Link's world. And,
boy, oh boy. Boy, oh boy.
And yeah, it was... I basically just want to get to Game On to talk about why.
Okay.
But
unfortunately, you'll have to listen to me first. I'm sorry to tell you.
To wrap up my rant, it's very immediately gratifying in the way that all the top-down Link Zelda games are. Mm-hmm. It is nowhere near as epic as Ocarina of Time, yet I thought what it did well was knowing its own scope and scale and saying, well, we're a Game Boy game. We're going to be roughly this size, and we can only do this much stuff. What's the best thing we could do with those elements and that scope and that limitations? And they sure did a great job, considering. It's like the story is not a story that I would say is mind-blowing on the level of like a Dark City, but you're like, ah, what a nice little twist for a short, tight little story. And everything about this game feels that way to me. It's like Nintendo knew what they were doing and they sent their like B unit but still top level game designers to go make their Game Boy version of their popular property, and they nailed it. They did exactly as they were tasked with doing. They made a good short Zelda game. End of player one rant.
Okay, this is player two plugging in, and I think this is kind of a cynical game in some ways. I'll tell you why. So there's nothing bad about it if you like Zelda. If you like a Zelda game, you got one. This is a Zelda game. It's, you know, not as good as Link to the Past, but it's better than Zelda 2. It's a very good top-down Zelda game, and that means it's a very good game. And yet, I have to ask myself, in this day and age, why are we remaking this game? And I know it's because, well, they can't just drop the Game Boy game onto the Switch, probably. And yet my question would be, but can't they? Can't they just drop the game onto their online platform where they're releasing all the rest of their games for free that are their old classic games?
Classics collections. Yeah.
Why is this game being lovingly remastered, but it's not being changed? It's not being remastered like Final Fantasy VII's being remastered. It's just being reskinned and released for a full $60 price point on the Switch. Now, I'm not going to say that it isn't a fun Zelda game. It absolutely is a fun Zelda game. I just think that having played it and having played it for the first time this year and enjoying it, I'm sort of looking back being like, yeah, this just feels like a cash grab to me. It sort of tips over into the cash grab part of the equation to me. And I feel a little uncomfortable with that. Whereas if they were going to remaster, for instance, Ocarina of Time or like any of the classic Zeldas and charge me full price for it that like has a sort of historical place for most gamers, I'd be like, sure. This is doesn't have that, or maybe it does and I'm just not aware of it. I just don't think it deserved to be a full $60 game, and that's my rant. So,
and that's his rant. And that's a checkpoint.
Yes, it is.
And now it's Game On.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry, though. He's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
We're really in the dark dungeon now. Do you disagree? Do you think it's not a cash grab, that it's an awesome thing for gamers?
Everything's a spectrum, right? So you just mean more, how much is it a cash grab?
Yes.
I mean, every game that's made, they hope to make money. That doesn't make it a cash grab.
Does it
but
bother
I think
you,
I know you
more
mean.
Than other, like, it's
well,
just a facelift.
Our last episode was Jedi Fallen Order.
Sure.
And it had a lot of merits to the design of it that we went into in that episode. But I would argue that almost by virtue of being under the umbrella of Star Wars properties, it's nothing but a cash grab. Isn't at some point in a successful franchise, can't you say every Mario game's a cash grab? And then when Odyssey comes along and you're like, they really did an innovative, good job with that cash grab, I guess the question starts to lose meaning to me because, and I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and this is probably more in depth than you wanted to get so quickly, but corporations don't truly exist in and of themselves, right? They're comprised of people, but...
Well, unfortunately, we don't politically agree with that, but I'm going to move on before... This is not a politics podcast.
I guess I mean in the sense that a corporation can only exist if human beings exist to do it, like a tree falling in the woods.
You know what I mean? Yes, I agree.
Philosophically, humans must exist for there to be a corporation working in any way.
Correct.
And I feel like in some important ways... The act of incorporating and even like teaming up into categorizations like humans, or if you're a fucking prick, my race or whatever, you know, or nation, is that we become more, we have way more ability to rationalize and deny culpability and things that upset our moral center because the guilt is all shared and offset to the corporation, which takes on this sort of aura of its own existence that we call a brand. And in that regard, I think you have to differentiate between, like, okay, here's my point. Nintendo can be making a cash grab, and the game could have been funded for cash grab reasons by people who had cash grab in mind, but the person sitting at the computer typing out the code or designing the level map, for all we know, might genuinely enjoy the project and be trying as hard as they can to make their best artistic decisions. It's really impossible to know or separate. My point being that cash grabs can turn out well, and I think that's what this is. I think it is a cash grab where the people who worked on it tried hard and did a good job, but it's still a cash grab.
Let me dial back the obfuscation of what is and is not a cash grab in my mind a little bit. So to me, this is a game that mechanically and in terms of story, everything except for how it looks has existed for 20 plus years, 27 years, right? There's nothing about it other than the way it looks that is updated for this re-release, right?
When you first loaded it up or first saw the commercial, though, did you have the same experience I did where you thought, that is a hell of a facelift? The particular graphical look of it is delightful and like vibrant and very pleasing
and fits
and
it fits
awesome.
The story yes, but like, okay, so again though, so let's not forget Nintendo has an online collection of Nintendo and Super Nintendo games that for $20 a year you have permanent access to. It it's essentially like a Netflix for select Nintendo games, and it's a very select
does it feature
few.
Game Boy
it doesn't, but that's my argument. It's like, well, it should include Game Boy games. And I think charging $60 as though it's a brand new property, the same price they charge for Breath of the Wild is crazy.
No, when you sit and like, I think Nintendo is guilty of this. First of all, their store page just sucks ass generally.
It's really bad.
Like literally
the
page.
Really bad.
But,
yeah.
But the, I think they've gotten entitled as far as, now that everything is streaming and there's such a thing as Steam and so many people are immersed in it, and there are games that range from $2 to $60 to $100 if it's the definitive special edition with the DLC season pass included. Like, I think this idea of a standard, like for the most of our lives, it was $50. Every game costs $50.
Yes.
And then they raised it in the last 15 years to $60, and that's just inflation. But my point being, it's weird to me even that Nintendo still sticks with the entitlement of, well, that's the standardized price of a fully programmed Nintendo game. Whereas I think you're right. I forgot it was that much. And when you say that, I cringe. Like, for the exact reason you said, this game is great. But even when it came out on Game Boy, it was a Game Boy game, not an SNES
right.
game. And they're different in scope.
And I don't think they cost $60. Back then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is not Breath of the Wild. Like, if you can get the full experience of Breath of the Wild for $60 and it's the same company with the same character, don't you understand why this shouldn't cost quite as much? That's a very valid point.
And
it's very expensive for what it is.
I'm not anti-capitalist here. Like, there's a part of it, at least not for the purposes of this discussion. So, like, if somebody was like, listen, man, Call of Duty should cost $107, you know, and like, and Zelda should, like Breath of the Wild should have cost $120. And like, what you're doing is actually paying the premium for games not having inflated enough. I can accept that argument, but that is not the actual state of affairs right now. Right now, charging $60 is basically the most you can charge for a game as a new release. Now, you can charge a season pass on top of it. You can have in-game transactions and so on. I understand that. But a $60 release means this is a AAA premium new release. So let's ask ourselves, why, if you're going to re-release a game and charge full price, what is the expectation for that re-release? And I think a very good two examples to pivot around is Resident Evil 2, that recent remake, and this upcoming Final Fantasy VII. Both of those games took the original concept and then updated it for this is how games are now played, and gave you a current experience of the old game narrative and checkpoints. And to me, that's
the
a full game.
The argument for the remake in both cases is that the original developers sort of had a core mechanic that they found a way to work with, but literally was based around the limitations of the engine. In Resident Evil 2, famously, walking sucks ass. Like,
right.
You have to turn like a boat and then slowly
right.
walk forward. And on the one hand, they said, you know what? It's okay because it's a zombie game and it'll heighten the tension. And it did. It kind of worked that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it didn't harm their game and it was still a fabulous game. Nevertheless, now that the current technology exists, I think even the developers themselves would say, oh, I would love the idea of getting to have remade that with the ability to just press the thumbstick and you can move freely around. That's kind of what we wanted to do. So yeah, in both those cases, you're changing the mechanics.
Yes.
But I would argue that, well, FF7 remake is the most drastic change. But
for the better. I haven't played it yet, but for the better, I imagine.
But not, I imagine as well, but not counting that Resident Evil 2, I know you. I'm just discounting the thing that you said, I'm sorry, but I mean, okay, that aside, the one thing that they said, which is a pretty obvious idea, Resident Evil 2 was a masterpiece of a game, but it was hard to move around. What if we release it and made it easy to move around? Nothing else is really different. I know Mr. X is slightly different or whatever,
mechanically functions. It's rendered in 3D space, whereas the original one was more top-down 2D space, right?
It wasn't top-down. It was postcard 2D backgrounds,
yes, right,
with your 3D character moving in a fake, like, superliminal 3D space.
Yeah.
Like, you did walk forward and backward and get bigger and smaller, but it was a weird combination of sprites and 3D models. And I guess all I'm getting at is Link's Awakening has the graphical enhancement, and I do think it's fair to say that we often go, yeah, but graphics is graphics, whatever. That's not artistically important, or that just takes care of itself or whatever. But that's not true. Graphics are very important.
Of course they are.
And visual art is an important component of the interactive medium.
Sure.
And the graphics are fucking cool. They're like delightful. They're Pixar-y and like jovial and bright. And they add the dungeon building component, which I know a lot of people didn't care for. I spent at least 6-7 hours fucking around with it. I actually really enjoyed it. And what was the last thing? You already said it earlier. There was another thing they added that's different.
I think they added a specific color dungeon, I want to say.
That was a new dungeon,
I think it was a recreated dungeon. Yeah, I think it was new.
So I guess I would just argue that the whole pie that makes up a video game is mechanics and graphics and score and story and the voice acting. And so to say remakes should only be made if there's a mechanical change is elevating that facet over the others unduly.
It should be charged full price if there's a mechanical change.
Why is the mechanical change so much more important?
I think
is it because programming is mysterious to us and we don't know how to do it, but we know how to draw things?
That's a fair... So, like, let me... I actually think I can illustrate this better by using a different example because it gets really, like, subjective at that point, but let me use a different example. So we've had this ongoing conversation these last 5 years about were the new Star Wars trilogy enough of a reboot? You know what I mean? Like, so... Or enough of a sequel, for instance. So, like, Force Awakens, the rundown on it that everybody agrees on is like it's basically a beat for beat remake of New Hope, and so because of that, we feel cheated, right? We feel cheated because it's like, dude, you just.
Oh, I thought most people liked it because of that.
No, I think that's why.
Why J.J. Abrams was reinstated? Because everyone's like, no, Rian Johnson, don't do anything even slightly different by a negligible percentage. Bring J.J. Abrams back. Just give me the applesauce, daddy, like I just eat applesauce.
I think that we're...
Isn't that the tenor of the internet right now?
No, I think that we're summarizing a particular piece of the internet and assuming that's the entire internet, and it's not really. So
everyone on my Twitter timeline is pretty much of that opinion.
Not mine, but okay, fair enough. Okay. So that's, there are varying opinions, but I think it's safe to say that Force Awakens, one of the things that we ding it for is the fact that the main thing that a movie is, which is a narrative visual story, it chose to take all the beats and sort of reskin them with, you know, updated graphics. You know, like, that looks better, it's newer, it's but basically same beats,
and
right?
And they flopped one or two beats. It's like it used to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, now it goes 1, 4, 2, 3, 5.
Yes.
You're like, okay.
Right. So now let me use, and this is a thing I've recently discussed, but so now let me talk about Ocean's 11. So the movie Ocean's 11 is also a reboot, right? It's also a reboot, but the only thing it's keeping is a brand name and a location and a basic, a very loose basic premise.
And a casting strategy.
Yeah, right. Like sort of a motif, if you will.
A production strategy, in a sense, that is its legacy. Yeah.
And to me, I think, hey, that's a really smart reboot. Like, I have nothing against it whatsoever. And it's still delivering a fundamental experience that I expected it to, and it's not that different than the original experience because they're both supposed to be heist movies, right? But because it only took those few elements and the rest of it was updated for its time, I feel like it's a totally legitimate enterprise. So now let me apply these two examples to Link's Awakening. So to me, Link's Awakening is closer to the Force Awakens spectrum. In fact, it's even further on that spectrum than Force Awakens because it was unwilling to even really like flop a few beats. It wasn't even willing to do that. It was just, it's just graphics. And the Final Fantasy VII reboot is closer to the Ocean's 11 reboot, where it's like, yes, we're going to keep the story, but the way that you interact with the story, which is fundamentally what games are, totally different. And I think that does matter. I don't think that's a small issue. And I think that we should, as consumers, feel a little more frustrated by this particular gambit from Nintendo, particularly because Nintendo's not making enough games for the Switch. That's why this project exists, because they're not making enough games. Like, it was the second biggest release this year for the Switch.
Yeah, but it's not a reboot. It's a remake
right.
and remaster.
Sure.
I would argue that if the Psycho remake changed the ending, that would actually be a misstep. You have to know what you are.
But the Psycho remake
sucks. There is
sucks.
A value. Time is... Oh, I love it. But to me, time is fleeting. I actually really like the Psycho remake. The Van Zandt one?
I'm just like, why do I want exactly the same movie that I got from Hitchcock? You know what I mean? Like Hitchcock, the Hitchcock one is fucking awesome.
Because I had never seen it.
Okay.
So this is what I'm getting at.
This is for a new audience is the argument then?
We would like to think that the story is our story and we've already experienced this, so it doesn't matter and it's redundant and a cash grab. But I've never played Link's Awakening for even a second before in my whole life. So even though what you say does make me agree that the price point is greedily high, I'm super happy to have had the experience, and I would never have played it on an old school Game Boy with crappy graphics.
I wouldn't either.
I needed this to exist in order to play it because it's the version for 2019. Like, why do we buy new cars? Because they wear out and they don't work anymore, and it's not the kind of car people have anymore.
And you need the
service. It doesn't drive as well.
You need the service.
You need the anti-lock brakes. You're used to having a rear view camera and you don't know how to parallel park anymore without it. I don't know how to play fucking crappy ass Game Boy games really anymore. I want the graphics to look nice.
I think there's some truth to that.
That's not even... I play a lot of retro pixel indie games, but my point is, I think what you're saying is true, but I think it's a stretch to then discount the practice, because there is such a thing as remaking something merely for the sake of remaking it. Very few stories are truly innovative, and yet people are constantly dying and being born, and they deserve to experience the great thing.
Well,
you know,
so, okay.
With modern sensibilities.
So then let me posit some other things then that are more neutral, because we don't have that strong a sense of morality about this with video games. Is like I think one of the big points I want to make. We're not as bummed about remakes and reskins with video games as we would be with movies. Because movies, we have a little bit more history. So imagine some executive in a fucking boardroom somewhere says, you know what? Isn't The Godfather a great movie? I think that the kids and the young teens need to experience The Godfather. And there's no way they can go back to this movie that's 50 years old or 50 years old and watch it because it's, you know, the old film and stuff and old actors. We need to remake The Godfather so that people can get The Godfather experience. Aren't you viscerally like, no, you don't need to do that. The Godfather...
Oh, no, not at all. Well, because I'm a weirdo in that I believe that The Godfather will always exist and is not added to or subtracted to by anything else around it.
Agreed.
That's how art works. Like, I would say anyone can remake anything. I don't care at all. Like, it never bothers me at all. Remake anything you want. Do 20 Ghostbusters. If they're all bad, I won't watch them, and the original Ghostbusters will still be good. I actually think the original Ghostbusters is overrated,
but that would
be my stance in this metaphor, if you follow.
So, so you don't think that remaking a thing, you don't think that remaking a thing in any way diminishes the original thing?
No, it doesn't diminish the original. It can't, because they're not connected. But I would argue
that's interesting. I mean, philosophically, they're not connected.
I would argue that it's been a historic trend in film, certainly.
Yeah.
That if someone announces a remake, especially the closer it is to the original, and if the original was a huge financial success, it generally turns out not good. And that tends to be because it really is far towards the cash grab spectrum, so they cut corners and they push as hard as they can to just get it out fast, and it's all image and there's no substance. And no one really had an idea for a story that deserved telling. That's not why they made it. But I do think it's different in video games because, as I said in the Breath of the Wild episode, nothing about the Link Zelda story is remotely anything or interesting or substantive
to
me in any way.
I think that's a little reductive. I think that's a little reductive.
I know you do. But to me, the story, once upon a time, for the 50th time, a guy who never speaks saved a princess from an evil guy we know nothing about. I am like, okay, that's as simple as you can get.
More than a little about Ganon.
Well, I don't mean to be dismissive, but I guess I do. But I don't mean to be in the sense that my main driving point is I love all the Zelda games and I play them
all.
And what I'm looking for is not story complexity, but rather how satisfying are the puzzles and the walking around and slashing stuff.
Agreed.
And everything in this remaster is dialed in perfectly, and it's fun to do.
I mean, and I think that your opinion...
So it's hard for me to get as hung up on the $60. I'm like, you're right, that is too expensive. Still glad I caved and played it.
Me too. I really liked this game, which I had not played before, because I really like Zelda games. Like I can't sit here and be like, this game sucks for a Zelda game, because it kind of doesn't. It's just like a pretty good Zelda game.
The dungeons are as well designed as most of the top-down Zelda dungeons.
Which it's not as good as Link from the Past. Like, I think Link from the Past is a little more complicated and a little bit better. But like,
they're very similar. Link from the Past is like a longer aged up version of this, slightly aged
with
up.
With a slightly more depth of mechanics.
Mechanical depth, yeah.
In part because it has two extra buttons. Like you have to put your jump on one of the two buttons, which I fucking hate about this game. But just one more time, and then I'll drop this issue because I know we've spent 20 minutes on it.
$60?
No. Yeah. It's not this. I've made my point about $60. I just want to get to the root of this philosophical issue, which is an artistic conversation. And that is, I think that my problem is that I reject the underlying assumption that people cannot go and have an authentic experience that's similar or as good as, or even just still good, with an older rendering in a media like property. You know what I mean?
Oh, of course they can, but I'm saying, because I believe that art doesn't diminish other art, that doesn't have any correlation to, people can enjoy the old one and these people can make the new one. And if you have the cash to spare and want to play the newer, sleeker one, you can buy it. It's all fine.
I
do whatever you want.
I agree. I'm not trying to limit their freedom. I'm just saying, I'm just trying to evaluate the value of the choice there. And to me, it's I think that I would rather see the effort spent on attempting to make new properties that have their own, even if there's new Zelda properties, even if this was like, hey, listen, we're going to do exactly what Super Mario Brothers, the Super Luigi Brothers game that just was released last year. You know what I'm talking about? That, I think that was also a Wii U game that was re-released on the Switch. That is essentially a reskinning of Mario Brothers. That's basically what it is. But they're like, but we're going to add some slightly new mechanics and update it a little bit, and it's going to justify its price point because of that. And I'm like, yes, I totally agree. This game refused to do that. They could have made a top-down Zelda game. There's no reason not to.
Like, the people who made Sonic Mania felt the need to. They're like, look, we're going to charge people, so we better add 8 modes and the ability to customize which shields are included and not, bells and whistles shit, because it's really just Sonic levels again. But put together well, so we better add bells and whistles. This doesn't have a lot of bells and whistles, but
it has none.
It has no bells and whistles. It has the dungeon builder and it has the graphics update, which is a huge
factor. That is a bell, and I like it. You're right. I just think as consumers, and like the video game consumers, need to demand more.
Eat the rich.
No, they need to demand more out of companies like Nintendo, because Nintendo refuses to cooperate with the other trends in gaming, like having backwards compatibility, releasing your library. Like, they're a lot more limiting of that.
I don't know.
And I
would just say Nintendo fans are already pretty fucking confrontational. If you follow,
I'm sure they are. I have no doubt.
The overwhelming avalanche of petitions and death threats because of the Pokemon Pokedex nonsense.
I do not
Nintendo
follow that.
Fans,
thank God.
Nintendo fans are not holding their tongues. Like, they're calling Nintendo they're calling for the heads and blood of Nintendo executives by the thousands.
I'm not encouraging gamers to be maniacs. I think this is one of those like sort of subtle things that is actually more important than the Pokedex
thing.
This
was a huge success, and no one really questioned the price point.
It's the same thing
as
when my friends say, like, oh, I want to see that movie, but I don't think it's a theater movie. I think it's more of a home movie. I reject that duality. All movies are theater movies because there is such a thing as a theater experience, and every movie deserves to have it. That's my opinion. And it's an artistic opinion.
The Poughkeepsie tapes?
I haven't seen the Poughkeepsie tapes, so.
VHS too? Or you know what I mean?
Sure,
what about
a
found footage thing that mimics television? Shouldn't that be seen at home on television?
Not if it was designed to be released in the theater, no. I would say,
okay.
Yeah, I don't think there's such a thing as this deserves to be in the theater.
That's
interesting. That doesn't. I don't think that.
Well, often on this show, we are opposed, and I think this is one of those times.
Oh, you think there
I'm
is such a thing?
Too.
You think, like, oh, we should have, like, I don't want to speak for you, but
oh,
what's the
yeah,
line
now
for
that
you?
Big f- now the big flat screen TVs exist, I would classify any movie that is just a modern setting acting tour de force where the lighting is not particularly painterly or anything. Totally. Watch it at home. What's the difference? Who gives a shit? Watch Marriage Story at home, of course.
For me, the difference is...
Watch Squid and the Whale at home, of course. Watch Avengers Endgame at home? No. It's only foreseeing in the movie. That's like the only way to get enjoyment out of it. But there's a ton of movies. Godfather you could watch at home easily.
We've been talked into the idea that that the theater is for the blockbuster sound and size. As though that's the only
Aristotelian spectacle, the true
right.
definition.
And I don't think that's the only thing we get from theater watching. I mean, I'm not, I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole here. And this is a good conversation. I think that in the same way that I am not willing to accept the reverse argument for video games, which is to say, like, the only way you can enjoy old content is for it to be remade. I just don't accept those assumptions. I think, no, I enjoy playing Super Mario Brothers, the original game, just as it was programmed with the original controller. Yeah. I still like that. And I understand if a kid doesn't, but that doesn't mean I need an update for it.
I apologize if that's what I said, but I don't think that's what I'm saying in the sense that, no, I'm saying try both, whichever one you enjoy more. You're right. Like, everyone's entitled to either opinion, and it doesn't matter, and they don't detract from one another. There's no such thing as whether the Game Boy is a purer version of Link's Awakening than the remake.
Agreed.
That is a meaningless question. I literally don't think it has any meaning.
I agree with that, except that the only way that they can get away with releasing this way is by not
withholding
making it
the
available.
Other one from
exactly.
us. Right.
That is a fake. That's a fake dichotomy. Especially,
and that ends the player one rant.
But like, again, Xbox and PlayStation and even fucking Stadia is like trying to eliminate those kinds of things, you know, and I think that's a good thing for gamers, and I think that we should care about it. I've said enough. We've spent enough time on this.
No. I'm just sad that Reggie Watts is the Stadia.
I know.
I mean, good.
Me
Get
too.
Paid.
Yeah.
But like, I just hope your average viewer investigates his amazing work and finds out more about him, because he's so much more than the Stadia spokeshead.
I do not fear for him. I think he'll be okay.
I saw him open for Devo. It was great.
Weird. That's a weird combination
good
of
show.
Things. Okay.
Yeah, Reggie Watts opening for Devo. Good show.
So what do you think makes this particular Zelda game stand out among the pantheon of Zelda games?
Oh, I don't think it stands out necessarily. I think Zelda as a franchise stands out. It's they invented the top down slashing through grass, winding up and swinging. The dungeons are little puzzle boxes that you slowly open till you get to the boss fight genre. And I would argue this one's just as good as any of the other ones. And that's my main knock against the Zelda franchise, is I do think they've gotten better about it. Like, something I love about Mario is 64 is very different from World.
Oh, yeah.
Is very different from Odyssey, is very different from Sunshine.
Correct.
For a long time, Link, and that's why Ocarina was so important, the switch over from 2D to 3D forced Link to become something new, because up till then they were pretty precious with the formula. Link games are largely interchangeable to me.
Except Zelda 2.
Until you reach...
Except Zelda 2, where they tried to make it a side-scroller, and they were like, that's a mistake. We'll never do that again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's kind of an anomaly.
Yeah.
But then when we switch over 3D, they go... Well, now how do you adapt that to 3D? And they did an amazing job. And then for a long time, again, like Twilight Princess and Majora's Mask, they add more systems, but they're more careful than the Mario team is. And it might be the same people, but I just mean with this franchise, they're slower to innovate. They're like, okay, Link does this. Okay, Link does this. But then I actually think they're really stretching their legs with the fact that Breath of the Wild took away one of the main things, which is...
Dungeons.
You always expect more and more sprawling, bigger puzzle dungeons than last time. After the water temple in Ocarina, you're like, geesh, how much bigger and more puzzly can this get before I can't get through them anymore? And then in Breath of the Wild, it's amazing that they're like, nah, this time there's like 150 tiny dungeons and only 4 big dungeons. And they're not even as big as your classic big Ocarina dungeons.
And you can so go wherever you want. You can, like, any trajectory you want to go, you can go there. I agree with that.
And the focus is physics puzzles instead of the old school 2D kind of puzzles. But nevertheless, so if you can find, like, the domain just to these top-down 2D Link games that feel like this.
Which
this felt like one of those, and I like them. They're fun.
I think there's only there's probably a bunch of them, honestly, that we haven't played.
Well, because there's Four Swords and there's Skyward Sword.
Skyward Sword is a 3D one with the Wii remote, isn't it? I've never played that
one. Is it? Okay.
See, that one's...
Then Four Swords, I know, is top-down, but what's unique is it's four-player co-op. But there are other top-down side games.
Skyward Sword is actually a risky version for... I think it's like one of the few times they tried to innovate and failed.
But it was produced at a lower budget than the core Zelda games. I looked that up.
Okay, interesting.
It was a bit of an experiment, but they didn't invest as much as they would in a mainline.
I think that's
game.
A valid critique you're making, is that they have tried things with Zelda. It's not like they never try anything, but they are a lot more hesitant to really innovate than they are with Mario. But they also release more Zelda games than they release Mario games proper. Right? Like, Mario gets, like, spin-off activities formed as a totally different game.
Well, it's interesting. Something David S/X Cohen says about Simpsons versus Futurama is that you'll notice the Simpsons plots will be way stretchier and go way farther and break reality and be bizarre, and, like, 100 things will happen in one Simpsons episode. Because it's set in reality and everything you're going to see is instantly relatable. Dad, kid, tree, bus.
Right.
They're like, so we push it far. If you parse the structure of Futurama episodes, it's actually intentionally a
simple.
Lot simpler.
Yeah.
And of course modeled after the structure of Next Generation episodes. But it's a more basic circular story arc where, oh, there's one overriding problem. Oh, the solution comes upon us. Oh, we're back to the beginning, but changed somehow slightly. And that's because they're like, well, it's sci-fi, so we're going to have to be explaining a bunch of bullshit and showing you a bunch of crazy aliens and explaining this is their deal and this is what they do. And that fills storytelling space. This is why they're so smart to me. I mean, this is brilliant to know ahead of time. So we simplified the stories to make room for that. And you're like, good idea. And I think that Nintendo's doing that with Mario because they kind of got locked into... Look, I don't know why he's a plumber.
Right.
I mean, really, the reason is overalls are easy to draw when you only have two colors and 8 pixels and you're programming Donkey Kong or whatever. And they're like, you know, he's just our mascot. So in that case, when you're like, you know, as a writer, if you were to sit down and brainstorm and say, well, what's going to happen in the next Soul Calibur game? There are a bunch of threads where you're like, well, Yoshimitsu's got to do this because that's what he always
does.
These
are things that
Voldo's
have to happen.
Got to thrust.
Yeah.
Whereas Mario, you're
pretty
like,
open.
So what should happen to Mario this time? And you're like, who gives a shit, man? Mario's nothing, which is kind of freeing.
Yeah.
Like, he can become a bee in space.
Yeah.
I don't care.
As long
it's
as there's
just
pipes.
A middle-aged man.
Yeah, as long as there's
pipes. He's just a guy.
Yeah, pretty much that's it.
So I think the fact that Link is sort of an appeal to actual epic fantasy, like it's the world is kind of Lord of the Rings light, you know?
So it's a little more contained.
Yeah, I think they're a little more solemn about like, well, the story is a legend. Legends don't really deviate, you know?
I think,
they're monolithic.
Well, and that's sort of true of Metroid also, which has not a lot of story. Metroid, as a core experience, really doesn't deviate much. So
I was thinking that. And in that case, I have a different theory that's probably super biased.
Okay.
I just think it's a more important mechanical innovation than Link really is, even though both are very important. Metroidvania-style gameplay is life. Like it's,
well,
I don't know.
They're kind
if
of
I
the
were
same.
The game, if,
like Zelda and Metroid are the same-ish.
Yeah,
you
but
know?
Metroid involves... They're the same ish, but that ish has minor nuances that are important. The feeling of areas that are locked off versus, well, you do get powers. And I don't know. I can't. Maybe it's just a sci-fi versus fantasy thing. Maybe
that
I'm
comes
full
back
of shit.
To it a lot for you, which I like. I like that conversation a lot.
But I don't think it's wholly that, and I'm having trouble elucidating it. But I do think there's, for example, I don't hear people cite Zelda games as Metroidvania games. So there are nuanced differences, whereas other games that come out are cited as
Metroidvania style.
You know, Blasphemous is straight up a Metroid game. And I would just say, if I were working on the franchise that is the namesake for one of the best, most important genres of interactive thing, Metroid-type games, I just would be too scared to fuck with the formula.
Well, it's love it so much. And there's not that many Metroid games, so like I think there's that to its advantage.
If you include indie games, we're kind of overdoing it now.
Yeah,
there
sure.
are actually like almost a dozen high-profile. What was the other one everyone loves where you're the girl running around, it's anime styled, it won a bunch of Game of the Year awards.
Bayonetta? No.
No, but that is a Metroidvania game, and then you also got... anyway, I don't have the list up in front of me, but my point is, I love them, I look them all up on Steam, and there have been, in the last 3 years, like 15 really good games that are essentially Metroid.
It's like,
and I played them all.
It's like the horror genre in movies. It's like, of course, like the fundamental horror experience is usually pretty similar, and we like it, so we're gonna keep redoing it. I just so that the audience doesn't feel cheated with this episode by not having actually covered the game, can I just say a couple things that do stand out about this particular game, which people seem to revere about it. The first thing is that it's one of the only ones that doesn't take place in Hyrule. It takes place on its own island, and the core story problem is not Ganon took over. It's please don't finish this game, because once you do, you're going to wake up, and then we will stop existing, which is kind of a fun wrinkle in the Zelda lore.
It's still simple, but it's more of a twist than Zelda usually has.
Yeah.
They're just basically like self-aware that this is a side story.
Yeah.
They're like, look, this ain't Hyrule. This isn't where you belong. You got blown off course. This is some Alice in Wonderland shit. When you finish the game, you'll just wake up in Hyrule and none of this will have been real. Please don't finish the game.
Yeah, please don't kill us.
And then you do and you wake up. And presumably they all died in horrible pain.
I kind of liked the fatalism of that a little bit. And I think people must have connected to that in the Game Boy age for the same reasons. Like, gosh, that's kind of a sad thought, and it's kind of mature for a young gamer.
That would have been mind-blowingly adult
opinion.
At the time.
Yeah.
In 2019, it's way less impactful,
sure.
although it still has impact. But if I were playing that on a Game Boy at age 11 when it came out and got to the ending, I would have been like,
whoa.
That's pretty deep and trippy for a Game Boy game.
Yeah,
man.
I'm not allowed to use the F word, but I was mind fudged by that for sure.
Did you save the princess? No, man. She wasn't even there at all. She never even existed.
Is there
bro.
Really a princess, man? You know?
Yeah.
So there's that. And the last thing is, and I am pretty sure this is in the original Game Boy game, the collection of Mario related toys. For the village.
I love that claw game.
I like the claw game too. Did it?
I also like the game of going all over the world map, unraveling the sequence of items that need to be
returned
to people.
That was my favorite thing about the game, was that there was one item quest that sort of took you to every area and gave...
And the shells.
Yeah, and gave you a... Yeah, and gave you sort of an emotional experience. That was rewarding, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it doesn't stand out much from... It's not better than Zelda 1 or Link from the Past.
No, it's not better than, but it's still good because it's fun to do the things Zelda does. If you like those top-down Zelda games, this is one of them. And that's saying something.
Agreed.
Like, that they're good games.
So I had a couple other things I wanted to say about it, if you don't. It's insane to me how much real estate on this island was spent on an obstacle course. Like, this is a small ass island, and they have
it's a dream, so I guess that's why. But
but these residents agreed that this one guy was allowed to use basically a 20th of the island for his bizarre fucking obstacle course with a raft. That raft obstacle course.
Oh, yeah. The whole section where they're like, now this quadrant of the island is just rapids that have been meticulously set up to create a rafting challenge.
Can you imagine the residents agreeing to that shit? How could that ever happen? It's just crazy. So there's that. I also thought the graves, the ghosts are very persistent in the Zeldaverse, and I feel like that should, like, if you lived in the Zelda universe, you would feel pretty good about the afterlife because of how hard it is to kill ghosts. It's very hard to kill them. I think you'd be like, you know what? I'm going to be fine after I die.
Yeah, Mario has a special place for ghosts.
Yes. Yes, right?
Nintendo likes ghosts as a stock enemy. Nintendo's also one of the only companies who allows their enemy types to Venn diagram sloppily over each other. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll be playing a random mid-tier Nintendo property, and you'll be like, there's fucking piranha plants in this. Why? And they're like, I don't know. They exist. Yeah, who cares?
What, you got something against piranha plants, asshole? Like, yeah. I guess not. Fair enough.
They're like... Yeah, Raving Rabbids fight Boo, but also everything else is unrelated to Mario. I don't know why. We bought that company.
Buy this game, you stupid kid. Yeah, I agree. Otherwise, I kind of missed the Master Sword in this game. I think that's like a trope in Zelda that they didn't have, and I'm like, I kind of like the Master Sword.
Is there any Triforce talk? I don't think there's anything about the Triforce. You said Ganon appears. I don't even remember
Ganon
that. When is Ganon there?
Ganon is one of the shadow beasts that you fight at the very end.
Oh, okay.
One of them is Ganon. It's like, oh,
I
Ganon's in the
game. He's a boar of some kind?
Yes, he's a boar man.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. He's a pig boy.
Right. Yeah. But then the main thing you're doing is fighting that bird, right? The dream bird? Isn't that the final boss?
The dream bird is... I'm trying to. I beat this like a couple weeks ago. It's like a series of monsters that you have to beat, like shadow versions of all the bosses you fought.
Yes, I know you fight every boss you
plus
fought
Ganon.
So far in order, plus Ganon, plus one more thing that I forget what it is, right? Or does it end on Ganon?
I think it ends with the shadow beasts.
Okay. But honestly, since it came up, I really liked that. I liked that you got to feel how much better you'd gotten at the game, because at the end of the game, the final boss is every boss you fought in order. And you find that where these bosses were challenging before, they're pretty easy now. Like, it's not hard to get through that swamp.
Especially if you were smart enough to collect the bottles and the reinforced shirts.
Yeah.
Which you kind of, they aren't things you would have had to get to beat the game, but if you don't, it's a lot harder.
I did all the side shit. I guess it would have been really hard if you didn't.
Yes.
But the even like 100%ing this game only takes 25
hours.
Maybe.
It's not a big deal. Not long.
Not even that.
This
maybe.
Was yeah. the most pleasant of the games that I was like, I need to play through this as quick as I can to podcast about it.
I would describe it as a sweet little ditty, and you're right. The main thing that bugs me about saying that is sweet little ditties shouldn't be a full $60. That is true. Good point.
I'm not so mad about how much money it is. I'm mad because, again, Nintendo has the ability to release this.
It's the concept that they're like, look, Zelda's in it. It's full price. Or I'm sorry, look, Link's in it. It's full price. Fuck you. I don't care if it's shorter or simpler.
And like it's...
Or if we invested way less budget in it than the other one, just pay us. Yeah,
it's the Disney vault. It's the Disney vault, which is like, you know, this vault shouldn't exist. Just like, let me buy the movies when I want to buy them. You know, like I want to be able to play Super Mario 64 right now, and you can't. There's like,
it's very
there's no place other than stealing it
on PC.
Yeah, you have to steal it, and it's like, no, I would pay $20 for Super Mario 64 today. I'd pay today for that.
I think Link's Awakening should have been $29.99 personally.
I would have been
right
thrilled with that.
Yeah.
But again, aside from Nintendo's like, hey man, this is capitalism, that's how it works. Fine. But also, it's more importantly, it was to bolster a pretty weak year of releases for them. That's like, hey, you guys need to have more games. Like this year they released Mario Maker 2, Pokemon, and Luigi's Mansion 3, and Link's Awakening, and like what else did they have that was a big release?
But they don't have third party as they are wont to not.
A million like little indie games, and I'm not mad.
Well, you know, they're opening those roads up. Like big budget third party shit says starting to get ported to the Switch. That's a new trend.
Yeah, but it's always worse there. Like it's not the best place to play them.
Yeah.
And it's like, well...
No, but it's cheaper than a PlayStation
equivalent. But if you're... And I mean, I realize I'm the Nintendo fanboy here, but like I'm just saying, like, hey, Nintendo, if you're going to intentionally make a system that has less computing power so that you can make it also a handheld device, hey, no problem. I like the innovation of it. Release enough games. You know what I mean? Release enough games. That is not enough games. And I think that people are reasonable... If they're like, there's not any games on the Switch, that sucks. I think that's a reasonable objection.
Sure.
You know, when they have like 10 great games, but that's all they got.
But that's a tale as old as time. Mm-hmm. That's what Nintendo does.
That's what they do.
They make good games. No one else will make shit for them, by and large. And they can only make games as fast as they make them. But
and they'll
good.
All be great.
That's what Nintendo is.
One of them will be Breath of the Wild. Yeah. And it's like, well, shit. That's
one of them will be Mario Kart, and it'll be really fun and good. And Smash Brothers will be really good.
Mario, whatever the new Mario platformer,
but
will be great.
You have to fucking wait for it. It'll come out when it does. Ugh. And there's very little in between to tide you over.
Do they not really?
yeah.
I understand. I love you and hate you, Nintendo. I love you and hate you.
All right. Final checkpoint.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry, though. He's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
We killed an animal we dreamed about, and we picked up its drum or whatever.
That's right, all those musical instruments.
One of seven times. Yeah. Which brings us to our final segment, Keep or Delete, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's the boiled down yes or no, should this game be honored or not, for people who crave that. I honestly think it's more interesting unpacking things, but we figured we should at least include a yay or nay segment, and this is it.
For sure.
So for this game, Adam, yay or nay?
I'm going to delete it. If I had to keep one top-down Zelda, it'd be Link to the Past, probably. And it's not the only Zelda I would keep, but I definitely can't keep like five. I would keep like a couple, and this is not one of them. For me,
I look much more charitably than you do on the fact that it's a remake. I want to say that is not going into my decision, but nevertheless, I will delete it for similar reasons.
Yeah.
Only because I expect, due to its success, they will remaster Link to the Past soon enough, and that will be exactly like this, but longer and better. So it would be weird if I kept this and then confronted that.
Remaster Ocarina of Time.
Because I'd be like, oh, I should keep this.
Yeah, give me Ocarina of Time again. Can we get that game remastered? I'm sure it'll happen. Well, those are the games that I feel like, you know, I don't want to argue because I think that Game Boy games are the kind of thing that most people wouldn't have played. So there is some value to that. The fact that I didn't play this before now, and you didn't either, right? And I wouldn't have without this. So that's valuable, and I don't want to take away from that.
That was my main delight, is that I never played this before. It's
same,
new
I hadn't either,
it's
and I enjoyed it. Yeah.
NBC, Thursday nights. It's new to you, shithead. You haven't seen it. You don't remember.
It's new to you, comma, shithead. Is
Last Man Standing, shithead. Yeah. Watch it.
Boy, we should be working for NBC.
Hey, if any NBC executives are listening and they like what they just heard, feel free to reach out.
It's new to you, shithead. Okay, well, farewell. I'll see you next time on One Upsmanship.
Yeah, work complete.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.